Got our news director, Chelsea Perkins, talking about what the newsroom has been covering. And then Shanai Matson and Annie Humphrey talking about Fire in the Village and the magical Fry Bread Drive-In, as well as an event coming up this Monday in rural Palisade, Rural Women Rising. That's all going on in our next hour. At 10 o'clock today, we bring you Back Porch on America Avenue. And your host today is Tom Daniel. Coming up at 7 o'clock tonight, Green Cheese Trivia with Christy Miller. And after dark is Jay Steel Wolf, Heavy Metal. Going on in our region, Loop the Lake is today in Bemidji, a celebration of bicycling. It's a non-competitive event at Lake Bemidji. The start is at the South Shore Park anytime between 7 and 10:15 a.m. You still have time to be there. Area restaurants and volunteers will host rest stops with food, music, and activities. Look for the KBXE crew. Safety is a high priority and helmets are strongly suggested. Leech Lake Days Contest Powwow is today through June 21st at the Veterans Memorial Grounds in Cass Lake. And also going on is the Midwest Mountain Bike Festival. That is through Sunday at Miners Mountain Rally Center in Ironton, non-competitive and open to all with demos, skill clinics, group rides, and more. Find more at MidwestMountainBikeFest.com. Continuing on today in Brainerd, the Crow Wing County Fairgrounds, Relationship Safety Alliance has their annual garage sale. Runs from 8 to 4 with proceeds benefiting services for domestic violence survivors. Up next, a rewind of the KEXE Morning Show.
This is the Thursday morning show. I'm Kari Hedlund here with Heidi Holton.
Now, Kari, as you do, you know, sometimes on the weekends, you end up at like a garage sale or a thrift store, that kind of thing. Sometimes you bump into somebody you know or you've met before who's on fire for their community. And that happened to me. I was at the Bovee City Hall basement at a garage sale. And who do I run into? Who's running the show? Nancy Lynn Meyer.
That's so funny. We had a great conversation, didn't we?
Yes.
Well, I don't always get a chance to have your ear, so I just was like, oh, I have something great to talk about. So.
Yes. Yeah.
What were you on fire about, Nancy Lynn?
Well, we have a new dog park in Bovee, but we have a big plan. We have big goals over in Bovee. So, we just opened a new dog park over there. On June 1st, we did that. And it's different than every other dog park in the area. So that's kind of why we get excited, because everything that we do, we try to be a little different than other cities.
Okay, so tell me, how do you see this dog park is different?
What was the extra spice? Okay, well, we have a large dog park and a small dog park, like most of them have. But we have a third dog park also, which we call a shy dog park.
Oh, there we go. We've got a peanut gallery here. What is it called?
Shy Dog Park.
Okay.
My dad built it, though.
Aha. Oh, nice. Okay, so tell me, who's the shy dog park for?
Well, it's for aggressive people. Well, no, not aggressive. We're not allowed to say that word, okay? So we're not allowed to.
Okay, we'll pull that microphone down. We can do that.
We are calling it the Shy Dog Park because it's for people who aren't really sure how their dogs are going to react to other dogs. And, I mean, what we heard from people is the main reason why people don't use dog parks is because you just don't know. Mm-hmm. You know,
poop laying around. So you never know.
Well, I think you maybe. I mean, I yes. You gotta,
but
you gotta watch out.
There's only one dog allowed in the aggressive dog park. So
the shy dog park.
All right. Let's say reactive dog park.
Okay.
We're calling it. Well, we aren't supposed to use that word.
Okay.
Either,
could it also be potentially for like a senior dog that maybe doesn't have the ability to play,
or puppies?
Yeah.
I mean, because even puppies can be a little too excited around the other dogs. I think also it could be for people who have more than one dog, because we expect that in the big dog park that, you know, you have to be in control of your animals by voice. So
have them on a leash law too.
We do have a leash law in and around the park, but when they're in the park, they don't have to have a leash on. But
right.
So we feel like it's, you know, if you have three dogs, You can go in there. You can shut the door and be alone with your three dogs and let them run, go wherever they want to.
That's hard.
So you don't have to have them all under control at the exact same moment. So
our limit is three dog parks. I mean, what did I say? Three dog parks. Three dogs in town. No more.
Oh, it's a law in Bovee?
Yes.
It is. Okay. It is a law in Bovee.
Wait, is this the mayor of Bovee with us today?
No.
Okay, I'm sorry.
This is Jameson. Sorry, I was about to say his dad's name, but this is Jameson, my grandson.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And he is very much a part of every single thing, it seems like, that goes on in
it sounds like
in
it.
Bovee. Yeah. We also have one of the things that makes our dog park different a little bit is we have like play equipment for the dogs in each one of the parks that our mayor actually built some ramps and things like that for them to run on. And then we also have some tires from
the junkyard from my dad.
No.
Okay.
No, that's not true. They are from the Hill Annex Mine. The museum. So,
wait, what?
When they were dividing up things on the museum stuff, you know, we got some of those big old tire tractors. So it was kind of exciting too. And we also have one other thing that's kind of cool is we have this dog sharing library. So we have like one of those, you know, like libraries.
Free little libraries.
Yes.
Yeah.
My grandpa built that. Just to let you know.
Yes, he did. And we just have it filled with sticks and brand new dog toys and stuff. But it's that same idea where you take one, leave one, you know, kind of thing. So
your dog doesn't play with it anymore. Bring it to the little dog library. Yeah. Love that.
Yeah. And there's like balls and bones on there. And treats.
Yeah, Jameson put some
treats.
Some dog bones. We have little packs of dog bones in there.
They're like this big though.
Okay.
Am I on screenshot?
No, this is a different kind of medium. This is a radio. This is old school.
We just hear you, not see you.
Yeah, that's nice.
Okay, so Nancy Lynn, let's talk about what else is going on in Bovee.
You're on the city council.
Yes.
Okay. I go to city council too.
Well, I'm sure you do.
This is
not a surprise to me at all.
He's totally on the city council also. At least his opinions are anyways, but...
Registered with the weekly meetings.
Yes. Well, he's very good at it.
One of the things you said you heard from people. So you're trying to create things that people want or need in the city of Bovee. Is it just like getting to know people, or how are you going about finding that information out?
Well, we have a really strong committee for the park committee. So we are, utilizing their opinions, but... I don't know. We also do listen to people on Facebook, and we do talk to people. I mean, that's one of the reasons why we really created the dog park, was to bring the community together. I mean, not only, I think that one of our biggest issues in the community right now, in our whole area, is housing and stuff. And so we're trying to make a community that is supportive of, you know, multi-resident buildings and things like that. But they don't really have a place to... you know, run around, and they don't have a place to take their dogs and things like that. So, I mean, so that's one of the things that we're trying to benefit the community with.
Do you guys like jokes? Jokes? Here, I got a good one.
Here, when we're done. Okay. What's your name, by the way? We have Jameson. That's right. Okay, so Jameson, we'll get your jokes at the end. How about that? Okay, so save it.
Yeah.
Okay, Nancy Lynn, let's talk about... you are talking about small town, you know, being on a city council in a small town, but you are not from a small town. And so what have you found, right?
How do you know that?
Heidi. Detective Heidi told me.
Very true.
So tell me about that experience of going from the metro to Bovee, and what you found sort of inspires you about that.
Well, I think that what inspired me is that when I grew up in Maple Grove, right? So... but at that time, it wasn't a big city. It was very small town feel. Yeah. And it was all cornfields. And, you know, we had our small main street was Osseo, which is still has that small main street feel, you know. And I think that that's why my family kind of migrated to northern Minnesota, was to keep that small town feel. So due to some, you know, things in our lives and stuff, we really kind of lost our home feel and lost my parents when I was young and things like that too. And so I think I was always searching all my life for a small town and feeling like home again. And I really found that in Bovee. I mean, I don't know. And it's kind of a funny story, but I never was going to move to Bovee. It was kind of an accident that myself and my husband lost our place to live. We had less than 30 days to find a new place to live. So there was an opening in Bovee, and I told the owner of the house that we were renting that I would never stay there. I wouldn't sign a lease because I was never going to stay there more than a month or so. But we had to, you know, we were desperate. We're still there after, I think that was 12 years ago. So we actually bought the house that we were renting. We just don't leave. I don't know. But I think that there's just such a feel in Bovee that's different. I think because it's the home of the picture, Grace, which, you know, sets us apart from everybody else, that we're the state picture. And but then I also feel like there's just so much history there that's besides that, and so many people who love that town. I think that we had just kind of wanted a park. Originally, it was like, we need a park. And I always wanted to create a park that was for all ages so that I could, in fact, Jameson was kind of my inspiration for it, because I wanted a park where I could play with my grandson, not sit on a bench and watch him play. And so it's always been something for all of us to, that's been our vision, you know, is to have all ages and all abilities. But yeah, we just wanted a nice park. And then when we started that initiative, people were overwhelmingly like,
Oh no, I
can't, I'm afraid.
Okay.
Oh my gosh, child. Okay, let's not talk about that one yet.
Okay.
We've had a little bit of vandalism here and there, overwhelmingly, when we put out a fundraiser and we ask for help, I can't believe I am so, and I put that on our beautiful Bovee page at times, that I'm just so overwhelmed with the love for that community and the people who have grown up there, who don't live there anymore, are willing to donate, they're willing to help, and it's amazing. Like,
so there's a plan was there a splash pad? I swear.
Yes.
That was, you told me about that at the
Yes, cut, yes,
the
that
Roman
is true.
Show. Okay.
Okay.
Splash pad too.
Okay, but that's our secret. Okay. No, it's okay. It's okay. So overall, we still have more things that we want to add to the dog park too. I mean, we need some shade. We're working on some trees. We're going to do some fundraisers for those kind of things. But we are planning to put a splash pad in the dog park. But this came from our splash pad representative, because we have been working on the splash pad, a big splash pad.
For people.
Yeah. We've been working on that for over a year now and designing it. The group, it was a little harder than I think we thought it was going to be, but we finally have our final plans and everything. We're very excited about that. We need a lot of money for that, though.
Mm-hmm.
But in putting the water in for the splash pad, and we're hoping to do that this year, we're just going to draw a line. We're going to put the line a little bit farther. It'll run right into the dog park. And so we're just going to have like a little area right there that has like a little bit where dogs can drink or run through the water and stuff like that. And so it just has like a little play area and stuff. It's quite small, but it'll be fun. I mean, and our splash pad representative said, nobody else in Minnesota has one of these yet, so you got to do this. So we're like,
well, and you guys are going to be for the people splash pad. I mean, I know that around here, as a parent,
yes,
I hear a lot of people asking for splash pads. So you guys are going to be on the forefront of that this area.
Yes. We just keep crossing our fingers, and we're looking for sponsors, and we're just doing all our fundraisers, and it's not a done deal yet.
Okay.
But we are very excited.
My grandma, both grandmas, and they're both nurses. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
She's a psych nurse, though.
Oh.
So.
Yeah, that's why I'm a little different than everybody else, because I'm a psych nurse. Yeah.
She's a little weird. No, just kidding.
Aren't we all, Jameson?
Yes.
We're all a little weird.
Also, of course, coming up, how many years has the Farmer's Day?
Oh, yeah, what year are we on for that?
Celebration coming up in Labor Day weekend.
Oh my gosh, I don't know. Are we at 112? 113?
Like yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
How old is the Titanic? 100?
Jameson loves the Titanic more than you can even.
The Titanic movie is better. It's my favorite movie.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Yep. He's totally into history too. It's kind of one of our things that we'd love to do together.
I'm a Fitzgerald too, so.
Oh, sure.
So does my dad.
Sure.
Yeah.
But that'll be coming up Labor Day and lots of stuff. So if people want to know what's going on in Bovee, should they be following Facebook?
Yeah, we do. Or, we put everything on Facebook and all of our fundraisers.
Do we?
Bovee Farmers Day is kind of its own. It has its own separate committee, which is very exciting right now because they're on fire too, putting in some new things and stuff like that. And then there's Beautiful Bovee, which is kind of the group that we put on things for this community and take care of all the green spaces and things like that in town. There is a park committee page also where we kind of, you know, put up our new ideas and things like that. So, and then the city of Bovee just got a new, its own page too. So we got a little bit of everything.
Wow, you guys have a lot of...
Just put in the word Bovee and we got lots now.
Yeah, and I even have a little sister too, so.
Wow.
So,
oh so Jameson, all right, now's your time to shine. Give us a joke. Lay it on us.
One joke. Do the best one.
Let me think.
oh, man.
What does a cowboy drive to work?
A steer.
A Bronco.
Email. Oh, a Bronco. Dang it.
That was pretty good.
Why don't you play poker in a jungle?
Poker in a jungle? What's that?
There's too many cheetahs. Cheaters. Cheetahs. Get it?
Oh, get it.
Okay. That's it.
Nancy. Mama, mama.
Nancy Lindmeyer and... her grandson, Jameson, talking about the city of Bovee. Thanks so much for coming in today.
Thanks for having us.
Yes,
thanks.
Of course.
Time now to check in with the KEXE newsroom. Our news director, Chelsea Perkins, joins us now. Chelsea, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. So the big news that got so much response, of course, this week came out of Bemidji and ICE. Tell us how the newsroom approached this, what the story was, and how the newsroom approached it.
Yeah, so Thursday last week, we started getting some information in the late afternoon that there had been some people detained by Immigration and Customs Enforcement in Bemidji, and we were working to get information on that late Thursday afternoon. We were unable to get any confirmation until Friday morning. So we waited until Friday morning once Mayor George Prince had made a post on social media regarding the operation. He confirmed that it happened. He also said that the Bemidji Police Department did not participate and was not informed about the operation taking place. So Larissa, at that point, basically went out into the community and started to try to find out more information. We had heard that additional operations were taking place or had taken place beyond the one mentioned by the mayor and into Friday morning as well. Meanwhile, we were receiving some, getting some photos from the incident and doing our best to try to get in touch with as many people related to it as possible. Our first point of action was to email Immigration and Customs Enforcement, as well as U.S. Border Patrol, seeking confirmation. We have asked for a few more times since then and have not yet received any official information from those agencies about this operation. So Friday was quite a hectic day of trying to gather as much information as we could. There was also some community members that decided to gather at the Paul and Babe statues in Bemidji. And many of those were Indigenous women and were there because they had heard that members of tribal communities were also among those who were being questioned by ICE. And so we just did the best we could to pull together a story by Friday with as many facts as we could muster. Larissa went to the neighborhood where this took place, and we found work vehicles left there, but no workers around. And we're still in the process of working on that story. We're still talking with people. We're still learning more and trying to get a full picture of what occurred.
Has there been any other activity in, I'd heard Brainerd and Park Rapids, have those been confirmed or?
Yeah, earlier this week on the Up North Report, we did cite the Park Rapids Enterprise about additional activity that took place in Park Rapids. And that involved the owner of a Mexican restaurant in Park Rapids. As far as Brainerd, I think that much of the ICE activity that's been reported here has been people being transported to our county jail. Our county jail has an agreement with the U.S. Marshal Service to use beds within its jail. And within that agreement is a piece that allows ICE to basically assume that contract. And that has been happening quite a lot since December of 2025. So at any given time, there are dozens of detainees from all over Minnesota, possibly elsewhere. We're not always sure exactly. The information can be difficult to come by, that are being held in Crow Wing County. They're being transferred through here as well. So sometimes it appears that folks are being taken here as sort of a waypoint before they go elsewhere, whether that's the Whipple building or out of state.
You said a couple of dozen is what you kind of...
Well, you know, the numbers are not easy to come by. In fact, it's something that I have asked for from Crow Wing County and have been told that I need to ask the federal government for that information. The daily census of the number of detainees being held in that jail. I have informally heard that there's between 40 and 50 inmates there right now who are detained by ICE, but I cannot confirm that because I have not seen it with my two eyes and I have not had officials confirm it for me. Crow Wing County Sheriff Eric Klang did tell the Star Tribune on Friday that 11 of the people detained in Bemidji were taken to Crow Wing County. And I later, there was additional media reports that some of those folks were also taken to Candiohi County, which is another county that has an agreement with ICE.
All right. Another story that you are covering, you know, of course, the beauty of the KEXE newsroom is, you know, you're looking specifically at things, but there are issues that are happening everywhere. And that includes like the police departments and how we fund things like police and emergency departments or ERs, not ERs, ambulance services. Black Duck made a big decision.
Yeah, the city of Black Duck, well, Larissa Donovan covered a meeting earlier this spring where the city council was considering whether it made sense budgetary-wise for their city to have a full-time chief and full-time patrol officer. And they have officially disbanded their police force. They have decided to enter a contract with the Beltrami County Sheriff's Office. And it's a budgetary decision. I mean, in fact, even the council member that made the motion to make this decision said she hated to see the police department go. She feels like it builds a better community to have a local police department. But the budget, the positions have only been filled by part-time sheriff's deputies anyway, despite the fact the city has been budgeting for these full-time positions. And they hosted a public hearing, listened to a presentation from the sheriff's office earlier this spring, and have decided to go that route. And this is not an uncommon decision. This is something that we are seeing pretty regularly in smaller communities in rural places because it just doesn't ultimately make financial sense for them to maintain their own police departments when they have so many other costs that they need to pay for with few residents to spread those costs between. So the contract, the city says it would save them between $25,000 and $40,000 a year to go this route. And in a city the size of Black Duck, that's a substantial amount of their budget.
You know, Chelsea, I was just having a conversation about, not this specific thing, but at Rialto, Festival Rialto last week, and was having a conversation with Jefferson and Megan from Sugar on the Roof, and they were talking about budgetary things within the school systems and the issues that Hibbing has seen, and we were talking about how the KAXC newsroom has helped us understand things in a broader sense, in that, you know, the Hibbing struggles with their budgetary issues are similar to what Grand Rapids, what Crosby, what, you know, all these schools that we have seen over the years experiencing the same thing. And in some ways it helps, in a lot of ways, it helps us understand that it's less of an acute issue and more of like a broad issue that so many people are experiencing. So I think that that's something that I think having news in our region has helped us see that, huh, these issues maybe are, there is a bigger issue that is, that we are experiencing that needs to be addressed versus like these dealing with, you know, these individually. I don't know if that makes sense, but.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this year alone, we had two different districts on two opposite sides of our listening area that were considering the closure of elementary schools because of the financial issues they were facing. Right now in Brainerd, that decision may be being made next year. Mm-hmm. There is budgetary issues happening in the Brainerd School District. The schools, you know, took almost a year to come to an agreement with the teachers' union, and now the school board just approved to seek a referendum this fall. Brainerd is one of the only school districts remaining that does not have a levy for its just everyday expenses, from a voter approved levy. And it'll be interesting to see the legislature this year. You know, we talk about the broader systemic issues and legislative fixes that may need to happen. This year, something finally got over the finish line that is supposed to help districts like ours that have a lot of second homeowners, like a cabin country, so to speak. And previously, for a couple of decades, those people who own property in our districts, they did not pay toward a voter-approved levy that helped with everyday expenses. And so that meant that that burden was specifically on people who lived there year-round. That may change. That has changed in the legislature, so that may change the dynamic now in whether these voter approved levies make it, what kind of financial, you know, shifts that districts are able to make in their budgets because of that burden being spread across more people instead of a smaller number. So there, one thing that we have learned in looking back at the 1976 headlines is, oh my goodness, it could be written today in so many of the cases for school funding. There was very similar concerns happening, very similar moves being that were needed to be made to help school districts meet the bottom line. And so this has been a long, long standing issue in our state, and especially in rural school districts.
But I think without a news team that's looking at this broader region, it sometimes is easy to just think it's, you're alone in this issue. Mm-hmm. And so I think that it was just a marker of how important local and regional news is in that conversation. So thank you for the work that you guys do.
Well, thank you. And I also think that it's a way that people can not only not feel alone in the issue they're facing, but also maybe find solutions.
Totally.
If something is working in this district, you know, let's try it here in this district. Yep. And when we're just focused on our own everyday lives, we might not be looking outside of that. And so I agree. I mean, I appreciate having that broad regional context when I'm thinking of these issues too.
And speaking of that, the hope is also, as you know more that and things you think there should be changed, that you actually get involved. We're talking here about school boards, city government, county government, state government. Where are we at when it comes to elections?
Well, if you are a candidate for office who has already filed in northern Minnesota and are facing a primary race, you should have received an email from the KAXC News team. We are currently requesting candidates' information for an election guide that we are putting together for the primaries. There are, I want to say, including statewide races, 120 plus candidates in our region and statewide that our region will vote for that are facing primary elections. That includes county level offices, that includes some city level offices. We have some sheriff's races where there's four or five candidates. We have an auditor treasurer race in Becker County with six candidates running for that seat. And that needs to be narrowed down to two so in August so that those two candidates will go on to the general election in November. So we are working on a primary election guide. We want people to be informed about that. There's some legislative races as well that are on the Republican side of the aisle in our region where there is more than one candidate. So things are very much happening behind the scenes here in the newsroom to prepare for getting people that information. Next week, we will be partnering with ICTV to do some interviews with the commission, the Itasca County Board, Commissioner District 1 candidates. There are three of them who are vying for that. So that needs to be whittled to two in the primary election. We are going to be doing some sit-down conversations with those folks and sharing that on ICTV. You'll be also able to find that information at KAXE.org. And so we're excited for that to bring yet another way for people to hear from the candidates who want to represent them. You'll have to tune in for more information on where to find that once it's available. But we are just doing our best to cover elections as best as we possibly can.
Well, before we go, thanks goes out to the Minnesota chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists. They met this week for their annual meeting, and not only was the newsroom awarded some specific awards, but they helped us celebrate 50 years of KEXE.
They did. Yeah, we received a plaque for our 50th birthday, and they played a video that we made about our station and what we've been able to accomplish in 50 years, what our history is about, what our future's about. It was really exciting and fun to be highlighted at that event. I'm proud of the awards we came home with as well. And it's just such a great room to be in with folks that are doing this work, some really impactful work. And this is from 2025. So we're talking like, you know, the Annunciation shootings, Melissa Hortman, the beginnings of the ICE surge at the end of last year, lots of really impactful stories that have happened in Minnesota, national stories that have happened here. And there was a big focus on just how local reporters covering those stories are always going to be closer to the story, closer to who is being impacted. They played a video from people all over the country that were like saying thank you to Minnesota journalists for the work that they have been doing. And it included John Oliver in the video, which was fun. He also made a joke about how, you know, I hope you're enjoying whatever chicken you're eating right now. And there was chicken on everyone's plates. Yeah. So yeah, it was a great time. And we always appreciate the awards, you know, but it's also just nice to be around greatness and other mm-hmm. people who are doing this kind of work.
That's Chelsea Perkins, our KAXE news director. You can hear the recap from the news team each and every Thursday, and be sure to check out KAXE.org. There's some really incredible work being done each and every day. Thanks, Chelsea.
Thank you. Oh, one more quick thing. Can I say one more quick thing?
Mm-hmm.
Ice cream.
Yes.
I just have to say that Megan Buffington and I both worked at the same ice cream shop many years apart. Yet another thing that we have that is a weird little freaky coincidence. Lake Country Crafts and Cones in Cross Lake.
I like saying that one.
Lake Country Crafts and Cones. Yes. And I was noticed at the Mall of America once when I was a teenager, like, hey, don't you work at that ice cream store in Cross Lake? so yeah, it was pretty famous, you know, and I tried so many different ice cream flavors there I could never choose. That was, but I just had to say that I had
crops and coats.
My left arm was more muscular than my right arm for several summers.
All right.
That's all. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Chelsea. Coming up, we have more news from National Public Radio and then more local news as we continue talking with women in northern Minnesota who are involved and passionate about the towns and the government and the issues that are going on. We're going to be learning about Bovee and what is happening in Bovee. And then we're also going to be talking with some rural women who organize. That's Shanai Mattson and Annie Humphrey. Annie's also going to be our host for On the River tonight at 7 o'clock.
Rural women are invited to Meeting Our Moment. Rural women rising together on Monday from 5 to 7 in Palisade in rural Aiken County. The grassroots group will host a power potluck and speakers, including Palisade Mayor Gaylene Spolarich, Nevada Little Wolf of Women Winning, and Annie Humphrey of Fire in the Village. And joining us now to talk about that and a lot more is Annie Humphrey and Shanai Mattson. Good morning. Thanks for being here, you guys.
Good morning. Thank you.
Morning. It's really nice to be here.
Well, you know, the morning has been really interesting of featuring rural women talking about the things they care about in their communities. And that's how I would describe the both of you.
Yeah. I kind of talked to Shanai about growing up in Cass Lake, and my mother was an activist, and she was always alone in it. She never had a community around her. So only recently in my life I realized there's a community of women doing stuff like Shanai.
Yeah, and it's really great to be working with Annie and traveling around our region. It's making me reflect a lot on growing up here. I grew up in Palisade in Aiken County, also with a lot of women around me. Mm-hmm. The women have always been the real leaders in I think our rural communities. Taking care of kids, taking care of community, solving problems with what they've got. So, yeah, that's really the spirit of the gathering that we're having on Monday as well.
And you guys, also, art plays a part in this for the both of you and can be a real bridge to people coming together.
Yeah. Art, I think, has always been that to me. As far back as I can remember, but actually my mother, the activist, she was an artist as well, a visual artist, photographer, poet, author. She was just really she was a creative. And so I kind of learned from her that I could use what I picked up from her. The real moment for me was in 1985. I was in high school still. And I was dabbling at songwriting, and I went and saw the film Rattle and Hum with U2. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, I'm like, that's what I want to do. So, you know, I went that direction. Mm-hmm. It was really.
And now that's what you're doing, and that's what we're doing, which is super awesome. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Fire in the Village, which is our little arts and culture org.
Which is it now? It's over a year.
Yeah. 2 years.
2 years. Now, okay.
Almost, I was wondering. I think. Yeah, and it's been about a year that we've had room 203 in the old Central School, which has really been our homeroom and a hub where we are doing all kinds of creative stuff. Like last night we had our monthly print potluck, and the room was just full of people, all ages. We had little babies there as well as elders, and we were printmaking.
Mostly eating.
Mostly eating. Yeah.
There's not a lot of printing going on, but, you know, that's... It's great. It's just so fun. Yeah. The room is like chaotic.
Yeah. And what we're finding is that in our space here, but in the other spaces that we visit as artists, people are really hungry for that kind of community space where, you know, we're really getting together around the things that matter to us. Mm-hmm. We're making and sharing food. Sometimes we're making art, but mostly what we're doing is visiting. And we're hearing about, you know, what's going on in our communities, what's going on in our lives. And art is such a great way to gather.
Yeah. And I think people don't even realize how much they need to be around other people until they mm-hmm. get around other people. And they're like, wow, this is so cool. So, you know, try it. Get out and be with people.
Yeah, that communal experience and things like food and art and music are such good unifying factors, and it almost like gives an automatic icebreaker for an event. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the event on Monday, I do want to talk about a little bit. What do you, you know, is it for women leaders? Is it for anybody? Is it for, what are you hoping to get out of it?
Well, I mean, the idea for that event was really sparked because both Annie and I, we spend a lot of time in community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as we're doing that, we're hearing about things that are happening and the people who are making those things happen. And a lot of the people making those things happen in our region are women. And so the idea was to just have a get together, you know, lift up some of the women in our region who are doing really cool stuff. Some of them are, you know, they're like official leaders in that way, like they were elected into those positions or they're campaigning to be elected. But a lot of them are just grassroots people, women who are, you know, they notice that something is needed in their community and they get together and make it happen. And so we'll be sharing food. Annie's going to make fry bread, actually, and she'll talk maybe in a minute about why fry bread. But we're also going to be hearing from Nevada Little Wolf from Women Winning. She's from this region here. And a number of the people, like I said, who are stepping up to take on these leadership roles at a time that, you know, it's a hard time right now for a lot of people. And that's another thing that we've been hearing. So, Annie, maybe you want to share this idea of the magical fry bread drive-in, because after the meeting on Monday, we're going to be heading out on tour.
Yeah, so it actually came from a book that I read. And in this book, there's a place that every story is written by a Native author. They're from tribes all over the U.S., and someone put this book together. And what the book has in common, I mean, every story has in common, is this place, the legendary fry bread drive-in, where people stumble upon it by accident, like Narnia. They're walking through a trail at the end of the road on their res, and they see it. Oh, that wasn't there before. And there's a big yellow sign, and they walk down this trail. Opens up into this people milling about, green picnic tables, people beating, people talking. There's a food stand with the food, whatever. People who have passed away are there, and people from other eras, hippies, are there. So it's this really cool place. And after I finished the book, I'm like, God, it'd be so cool if this was real. And I thought, well, why not? Why can't this be real? So I didn't want to get into copyright problems, so the magical fry bread drive-in. And so we're trying to recreate that, and it's evolving. Of course, it's going to evolve, and I think we're going to stay in this magical fry bread drive-in mode for a couple years till it evolves into what it's going to be, because a lot of stuff me and Shania start, we have this preconceived idea what it's going to be, and then it's never that. Mm-hmm. It's better. So as long as you're not trying to control things and keep it like inside your little lane, it's that's all it's ever going to be. So you kind of got to let go, let things happen, and see what happens. So on Monday, part of the women leadership, I'm going to bring my fashion show. Mm-hmm. Because it kind of makes that statement of everybody has a role and every role is important. I think that, you know, policy making is important, but that's not my gig. I think that, you know, getting in the streets is important, but that's not my gig either. But I can do music and I can do visual art, and that's not everybody's gig. So it's really important that we all, you know, take on what is our gift, what is our strength, what is our passion, and just use it to uplift the people. And that's really as simple as it gets. And that, not to get too deep, but I think that's our purpose in life, is to be helpers to one another, be helpers to all the living things, all of creation. And if we could just do that, in my opinion, you know, just everything would be really cool overall.
Yeah, and I just love that, you know, that was your impulse, Annie, to say, wow, what if that was real? And then you make it real.
Make it happen.
I mean, that's the power of art. And that's mm-hmm. why artists, I think, are some of, you know, I mean, I'm saying this as an artist, but, you know, some of the most creative leaders that we have around are actually also artists.
Well, John Trudell right. made that statement. In these times, the poets and musicians and artists are going to be the high priests. whatever a high priest is, I'm not sure.
Well,
sounds cool though.
Also, you guys as artists in talking with people and in being organizers, having the mindset of like it's open and it's going to become when it's going to become. That's because you're artists and you understand that the
doesn't
idea
have to be predestined.
Changes all along the way. And sometimes our leaders don't understand that there's a need to just. We're doing this for this, and this has got to be this way. And it's novel to hear about that. And yeah. And very women do that too, are more open to that.
I think the other thing that we do as artists and also as women is we're really good listeners. I mean, we have to be, because we have to be aware of what's going on around us so that we can take care of each other and keep each other safe. And that means that when we're out in these art spaces in the community and we're hearing things, we're able to turn that into the gathering that we need. And I think this concept of the fry bread drive-in is so cool because, you know, fry bread has such a powerful story about what it means.
I forgot all about that, you guys. So fry bread, why fry bread? Because fry bread is a symbol of resilience. It's a symbol of making lemonade out of lemons. It's because the people were removed from their lands, not just here on these reservations, but every reservation in this whole country, the removal of Native people, Indigenous people onto reservations and into forts and whatever existed then. And we lived on rations. So, like, our way of life, there was no more, you know, hunting for deer or maple sugar or ricing. And it was a ration of, you know, the like, quesacola. He talks about it too. Flour, lard, sugar, salt, baking powder, and that's all you. And water is all you need to make fry bread. That's the recipe, you guys. I just gave it out. Secret. So they made fry bread, and we still make it. It didn't like die out, right? Everybody makes fry bread. Every tribe has their former
version.
Yes. Thank you, Kari. Version of fry bread, yes. And I think even going beyond fry bread, I think a lot of different cultures of people who are in the United States now who come from other places, they have whatever their fry bread is because their people had to withstand hard times. That's probably why they came to this continent, I mean, this country. So hard times, you know, make people resourceful and however you got to survive throughout history and among all people, we have. We all have. You have. We all have. And I think that's what makes us similar. So I think we're forming new fry breads now because of the times we're in. There are new things forming up that are going to get us through these hard times about, you know, people being kidnapped and deported and ICE and how people are surviving that. When we come out of it, we're going to have a new fry bread, I think. And we can use that fry bread for the next hard thing that comes because they keep coming. I am not in this dream world that human beings are going to start treating each other well. I don't. And so I think we just need to keep teaching our children. And that's what Shania and I, we're trying to influence. And you know, there are different words people use. Influence is not even a good word. But we like to get into the schools and middle school level, make them value themselves and find the art in themselves. And I want to actually transition from being a stage singer. I want to be a college and university lecturer. Mm. So I'm going to try and do that in my spare time. And
all your spare time.
I was just going to say.
Yeah. Like you're on the radio later today.
Yeah.
Oh, I got to go prime my pump. Hey, I'm getting running water. I got a pump in my yard, but I'm working with trying to get water. Yeah.
I love that story, Annie. And I think you're right that we all have, all of our communities have that. And I think for a lot of communities in this region in particular, there's a sort of resourcefulness like that because we live pretty rural. Mm-hmm. A lot of us have to travel pretty far. And, you know, if you think about when something's going on in our communities here, we often have a potluck or we come together, you know, around to help somebody who's sick or something like that. And so that's been part of the conversation, too, in community is like potluck people power.
Yeah.
You know, like we do know how to take care of each other.
Yeah. So this Magical Fry Bread Drive-In is going to be, the plans are to bring, it's a tour, a little bit of a mini tour.
Yep.
Is that right?
Yep. It is a tour, a mobile mini music fest. Okay, here's the full name. Both of my grandmothers, Mamie Mae's Magical Fry Bread Mini Mobile Music Fest.
How many M's is that?
But Jesus, who helps us create our flyers, thought maybe that was too many words to put on there.
Okay, what was the question again?
When does it begin and how do people, yeah.
Oh yeah, so we're going on tour. We're beginning in Duluth on the roof of the ACO building with the big water protector as our backdrop. It'll be the first show on the ACO ever. So we're going to go and do that. We also have with us, we'll have two poets. Okay, one is a black poet from San Diego, and the other is a local Leech Laker poet, and me. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be different. But the other thing about this whole tour, everybody, is that each of the artists, the printmaking, the fry bread, it is real art. Okay, making fry bread is art. The printmaking and the carving and the stamping is art. The poetry, the music, it's all art. But also within all of that, there are conversations to be had. It's not going to be really light, fun entertainment. Mm-hmm. There will be truths being thrown out there, you know, and things to think about being presented. And I think that's the important thing, is just get people thinking. You don't have to agree, but think about it. And maybe you know, you make that's up to you. So we start in Duluth on the 23rd, then we travel to Minneapolis on the 24th, and we'll be at the All Saints Episcopal Mission on Longfellow. And they are also the home of the First Nations Kitchen. And the next night we'll be at Hook and Ladder. That's the 25th at the Hook and Ladder. You need to buy tickets online for Hook and Ladder. So if you're listening out of Minneapolis, please get a ticket. And from there, we come home for a while.
Yeah, we go to Aiken.
And then we go to Aiken on
Monday. And Aiken at Sampa Guida. And that's a little music venue in town that does so much great community stuff. Yes. And, you know, there's a lot of people in Aiken who are connected up with what we're doing through, you know, some of the work there. So.
And then after Sampa Guida.
Bemidji.
Yes, at the Headwaters School. And we will be fundraising for their music program that they provide music lessons for Native students out of the Voyager School. And it's a really great program, you guys. And it's only $45 a month. We'll give one student lessons for a month because the Headwaters matches it. And the school transports them to it. I think we're forming new fry breads now because of the times we're in. There are new things forming up that are going to get us through these hard times about, you know, people being kidnapped and deported, and ICE, and how people are surviving that. When we come out of it, we're going to have a new fry bread, I think. And we can use that fry bread for the next hard thing that comes, because they keep coming. I am not in this dream world that human beings are going to start treating each other well. I don't. And so I think we just need to keep teaching our children. And that's what Shania and I, we're trying to influence. And you know, there are different words people use. Influence is not even a good word. But we like to get into the schools and middle school level, make them value themselves and find the art in themselves. And I want to actually transition from being a stage singer. I want to be a college and university lecturer. Mm. So I'm going to try and do that in my spare time. And
all your spare time.
I was just going to say.
Yeah.
Like, you're on the radio later today.
Yeah.
Oh, I got to go prime my pump. Hey, I'm getting running water. I got a pump in my yard, but I'm working with trying to get water. Yeah.
I love that story, Annie. And I think you're right that we all have, all of our communities have that. And I think for a lot of communities in this region in particular, there's a sort of resourcefulness like that because we live pretty rural. Mm-hmm. A lot of us have to travel pretty far. And, you know, if you think about when something's going on in our communities here, we often have a potluck, or we come together, you know, around to help somebody who's sick or something like that. And so that's been part of the conversation too in community, is like potluck people power. Yeah. You know, like, we do know how to take care of each other. Yeah.
So this Magical Fry Bread Drive-In is going to be, the plans are to bring, it's a tour, a little bit of a mini tour.
Yep.
Is that right?
Yep. It is a tour, a mobile mini music fest. Okay, here's the full name. Both of my grandmothers, Mamie May's Magical Fry Bread Mini Mobile Music Fest.
How many M's is that?
But Jesus, who helps us create our flyers, thought maybe that was too many words to put on there.
What was the question again?
When does it begin and how do people, yeah.
Oh yeah, so we're going on tour. We're beginning in Duluth on the roof of the ACO building with the big water protector as our backdrop. It'll be the first show on the ACO ever. So we're going to go and do that.
You can find all of this on fireinthevillage.org. There's a tab right there on the homepage that takes you to the Magical Fry Bread Drive-In.
Okay.
If people are interested in the gathering, the women's gathering that we're having on Monday, they can actually email me if they want, shanai@fireinthevillage.org, and I'll share some of that information with you all to share on the web too.
That's Shanai Mattson and Ann Humphrey from Fire in the Village. Find out more information about the Magical Fry Bread Drive-In Tour that's throughout the state of Minnesota at their website, fireinthevillage.org. Thanks also to the contributing rural women on this episode of Rewind. That is Chelsea Perkins, our news director, as well as Nancy Lynn Meyer, Bovee City Councilor. Thanks for tuning into the KAXC Rewind. Next week at this time, we'll be bringing you a look back at the movies of 1976. That's the year that KAXC began. We are people powered. We thank you for your support. Coming up, we've got Back Porch with Tom Daniel. Become a member now. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234. I'm Heidi Holton. Enjoy your Saturday.
Who give praise, take a bow as the light is the face. See me now, I'm loud and proud. And to those who fear leads them to hate. Oh, what a pity to be locked in that place. I know you see me though, cause the breeze don't blow cause you want it, and the sun gon' shine. Said the darker the berry, the sweeter the fruit, the kinkier the hair, the deeper the roots. Bow down when the queendom comes, take note when we speak our tongues. Darker the berry, the sweeter the fruit, give her a crown as she walk in the room. We are the first ones, we are light of the sun. All we want is to be ourselves. Shine a light with no problems. We don't want problems. I do believe in the power of me. Find you, it's your power. It's your power.
Thank you for listening to 91.7 KAXC Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXC Bagley, Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. We are People Powered Radio in Northern Minnesota. Join us at KAXC.org.
You are listening to North Star Stories, Voices from Where We Live, a newscast about what it means to live in Minnesota. North Star Stories is produced by Ambers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the McKnight Foundation and the state of Minnesota, online at ambers.org.
This is North Star Stories, voices from where we live. I'm Gracie J. This week, we remember the political violence that shook the state last year, and we look at the history of one of the state's newest official holidays. But first, here are some of the stories that made headlines this week. Bemidji city leaders say federal officials still haven't